Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, we talk about some of the films that will be screened at the 20th annual Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival. With us is the festival director and co-founder, Richard Paradise. Hey, Richard.
Good morning, Mindy. It's great to be here.
Film critic Tim Miller, who's co-president of the Boston Society of Film Critics. Welcome back, Tim. Always
hey,
good
Mindy.
To see you. All right, so before we get to the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival, I was just thinking the popularity of film festivals has really grown over the years, and I'm wondering if you why you think that is. Tim, why do you think that is?
I think there are opportunities to see a lot of movies that you can't see elsewhere, or unless maybe you're in Boston. Documentaries. I mean, how many documentaries are there at the Cineplex,
right,
you know?
Right.
So, or short films. I mean, the Richard's Festival, the short films are amazing. And most festivals are, you know, I saw some great ones at the Woods Hole Film Festival. And so there's an opportunity to see movies that aren't deemed necessarily mainstream, where they're not going for the commercial home run,
but they're great movies.
Movies and challenging films and not giving you the expected.
Right.
And also, I think there's more a sense of community at arts festivals. You know, you go to Richard's Festival and it's a packed house, mm-hmm. and it's people that, you know, 20 years, people are used to it. And or you go to Woods Hole or Provincetown, it's the same,
yeah.
you know, where and people are, talking with other people that strangers about, oh, did you see this? Oh, you've got to see this one.
Right.
We saw this, and you know, and exchanging notes. You don't get that. I mean, okay, Cape Cinema draws a certain sophisticated audience. I think where there might be some conversation afterwards, or Richard's Theater on the Vineyard, where mm-hmm. People are looking for challenging fare.
Right.
So I think, you know, it, but the sense of community can't be overestimated. I mean, we're so desperate for that now.
Yeah. So you're nodding your head, Richard. You're like, yep.
Oh, yeah. No, I would definitely underscore all of that. I mean, I think the popularity in film festivals has grown for two reasons that have converged. The lack of opportunity in other distribution channels. For instance, as Tim mentioned, most multiplexes, most commercial movie theaters rarely ever play foreign language titles. Mm-hmm. I don't remember whenever anyone will play short films, selective short films, unless it's in a festival environment. And then the other thing is also the tourism availability of tourism and working with communities to bring more people to a community. The popularity of film festivals has driven a lot of arts, cultural tourism to communities. Mm-hmm. Look at Woods Hole, look at Martha's Vineyard. I think there's four film festivals on Martha's Vineyard mm-hmm. throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And around the country, around the United States and in other countries, film festivals are a great way to bring people to your community to experience the other amenities of that community while also enjoying film mm-hmm. as a cultural art. So I think those two things converging together.
I have a really good idea. Remember when we were kids, you go to the movies and there would be like cartoons before the movie. And now you go and they have all these previews and there's commercials.
Yeah.
And what? How about if we do some shorts there, right?
That would be great.
Do a little short. It'd be much more entertaining while you're just sitting there waiting for the main film.
Right.
See if anybody takes us up on that.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
It would be great.
All right. So talk a little bit about why film festivals are important for filmmakers.
Well, I think, you know, obviously the obvious point is that it gives them an opportunity to engage an audience. Many of the film festival films that you might see in Boston, New York, even at Sundance, do not make it into a distribution channel in a theater. They might eventually be seen on the internet in a streaming platform. But even then, that is sort of a low probability. So film festivals really give that filmmaker an opportunity to watch a film, their film, in with an audience, a live audience, to get feedback from that audience, and to celebrate the whole sort of idea of cinema. Mm-hmm. Cinema is meant to be seen in a dark room with a group of strangers. That's where it originated, and that's where I hope will always be a place for that. But filmmakers really are given that opportunity, and there's no filmmaker that ever starts out blood, sweat, and tears of making a film with the idea, I really want to have my film on a streaming platform. It's never, never the goal. The goal is always to have it seen in a theater with a public audience.
Yeah.
I mean, that's think of any artist. Why do people write? I think in a lot of cases, hopefully, it's not the money. It right. might not even be fame. It's to be read. Mm-hmm. Or like Richard was saying, this is an opportunity. The people that are really putting their hearts into their art, they want it to be seen.
Yeah.
And so here's an opportunity. I think the other thing, though, is that it's also, I think, especially like with short films, it's a calling card where, you make a great short film, and it's like, oh, they know what they're doing. And maybe that somebody gives them a chance to make a feature film then.
And when you say a chance, you mean money, right?
Well, yeah. Backing or whatever. Yeah. So there is, wouldn't you agree, too, that that's an opportunity at least?
Oh, yeah. It's their resume, building their resume.
Exactly.
And portfolio.
Richard, you mentioned that a lot of times you have these films that go in the film festivals that don't find distribution elsewhere. But I'm wondering if the opposite happens. They go to a couple of different film festivals, especially some of the big ones, like Sundance, mm-hmm. and it becomes like a fan favorite. Do the distributors and that go, wait a minute, we need to get that film out in a bigger audience? Does that happen?
Sometimes you'd be surprised that it doesn't happen more often than not. I mean, the way films are acquired for theatrical or platform distribution, streaming platform, is, an art. It's not a science. It's mm-hmm. it's a guess as to what will be successful and not successful. Many Sundance films that come out of Sundance being acquired for big money mm-hmm. make no money. Mm-hmm. And they fail at the box office because it didn't captivate a general audience. The buzz that was created at the festival sort of propelled the selling of that film, but that didn't necessarily translate into the public accepting that film. So it's really hard to say why something becomes successful or not. There's formulas, there's certain types of films that are more appealing to the general audience, to a general public. But a lot of times, yes, a buzz of a film at a festival, a major festival where there are buyers, and there's only a few festivals like that in the United States. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, our film festival, International Film Festival, is not a buyer's
right.
film festival. We have rarely ever had buyers come to the festival. But those buying markets, Toronto would be another one. Fan favorites, whatever, buzz can create a interest on the part of the distributor. But that distributor also has this whole strategy, this right. whole, release pattern of what's going to happen for the next couple of years. And if that film doesn't fit that strategy, it might not necessarily, find their way to a distributor.
Yeah. I'm wondering, too, I'm thinking of the films that do get into the, the big, cineplexes and all that. Most of them are geared to a younger audience, right? Because aren't those the folks who really go to those? I mean, it's too bad there aren't more places for
And also, sometimes they'll go more than once to a movie, younger people.
Yeah. I've seen it six times.
Yeah. And that's from a commercial point of view, why not? But, supply and demand. It's troubling if you look at and you don't see anything that's challenging. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank God for film festivals and thank God for art houses.
Art houses, exactly.
you know, we haven't gotten into it. We'll get into them later. But I wanted to shoot you an email, Richard, about, you know, I saw your opening and closing films.
Yes.
And
oh, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, and they're among my favorites of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
fabulous.
Like, where would I have seen them? You know?
Exactly. Before we get into the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival, Tim, you are working on one coming up in October.
Yeah.
With the college.
At the college. Mm-hmm. I teach film and journalism at the college. And so we're putting together, it's called the Waves of Change Cape Cod Arts Festival. It's our inaugural. The idea is that there will be more to come. But it's going to be October 8th through 10th. And we're still, you know, fine-tuning it a lot. Mm-hmm. I just had a meeting yesterday. But, you know, it's going to have art shows. We're going to have a music performance. We're going to have
so it's bigger than a film festival.
Yeah. One day will be all day films. And I'm still putting together kind of the schedule and even now I don't know for sure like what's going to play at what time, and I'm trying to figure out very much. And but a couple of the films that played at Woods Hole, Judy Laster from the Woods Hole Film Festival has been a big help. She's been working with me and putting
this
together.
She's done. I mean, look what that started. The Woods Hole Film Festival, just a couple of films down in Woods Hole, and now, holy cow!
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
I know. What's it? 35 years, I think, something like that.
I don't know.
And I can't believe yours 20. Is 20.
I know.
I can't. We're all aging.
No kidding.
But all aging in one spot.
It doesn't seem like that's possible, right? Yeah. So 20 years. But talk about why you wanted to bring an international films to the Vineyard.
Well, a lot of times festivals will say international, but it ends up that probably 60-70% of the films that they're showing are all U.S. produced, based in the U.S.
Yeah.
I've always felt that there needed to be more space in distribution in cinema exhibition for foreign language films. Now they're called international films. You might remember the Academy used to award a foreign language, you know, film Oscar. And back 22 years ago when, you know, I created the festival with a bunch of other partners, volunteers, it was all volunteer at that time, I saw a need to show more of these foreign language titles films. I loved foreign language international films, and there was no space for that. And so I've always made it a point that 95 to 100% of the films that we show are all international productions. They are all in a foreign language. They all are set in a foreign country. The more countries, the better. And, you know, because I feel, you know, as I've been a traveler, I've been blessed with an opportunity to travel internationally. I've been to over 40 countries in my life. I've always felt that travel and going to other countries and, you know, and spending some time in these countries, even if you don't know the language, you do absorb cultural nuances and you talk to people and you get a sense of, you know, sort of what their lives are like. And I've always felt that even as a young person, that was my way to explore the world and to get out of sort of my sort of Americanism, you know, just my American point of view. And so I've always felt that that was a part of the mission of our festival, is to make it purely an international film experience, film watching experience. So, so 20 years, it's amazing. It's been that long. And it's grown in certain ways. Of course, the building of our center, the Martha's Vineyard Film Center, created one of the best venues possible for watching films.
Very comfortable, I might add.
Very comfortable. And also, you know, quality screen, visuals, sound, of course, all the things you would expect. And then also from a, you know, purely selfish point, very turnkey, not having to create viewing locations. First, you know, 10 years of the festival, or I don't know, first 8 years of the festival, I was a lot of my time spent was spent creating viewing environments and places.
I remember that, and I think in the early years, sometimes you had to choose between one film and another.
That's
and you
correct.
Might have wanted to see both of them, so you don't have to do that anymore.
You
either.
Don't. Yeah, you don't have to do that anymore. Of course, that limits the amount of films that you can show. If you don't have three or four locations and you have things going on simultaneously. But I think over the years, like you've said, Mindy, people like the idea that they can watch everything if they want.
Yeah.
And some people will see every single film. And the first 6 or 8 years, you know, unfortunately, we couldn't do that because we're using 4 or 5 different venues.
Yeah. All right, we're talking about the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the 20th annual Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival with festival director and founder Richard Paradise and film critic Tim Miller. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Before we get to the opening film, the theme is other places, other people.
Yes.
That's a theme you've had for a while, right?
Oh,
talk about what that theme is all about.
Well, again, just to kind of reiterate what I was saying earlier is that, you know, I really believe that film, the medium of film, can transport you to other places. You know, here I, myself, growing up in America, growing up, you know, in New Jersey, New York, I did have an opportunity to see wonderful films from foreign countries, you know, going to New York City in my early life was a great experience to expose myself to other countries and other places and other people that live everyday lives in those places. And it gives you a perspective on your own life. It gives you a perspective on how you treat other people. You know, we are a country of immigrants. And, you know, if you live in an urban area, urban setting, you are usually meeting people from other countries, other nations. Maybe they speak good English. Maybe they don't speak good English. But, you know, I think film gives you an opportunity to learn about these places. And so when you're confronted in a sort of in-person situation where you're meeting people from other countries, I think you have a better attitude, a better acceptance, empathy that, you know, where they're coming from, why they're here in the United States. So not to get overly, you know, sort of, I don't want to use the word political. It's not a political issue to me, but, you know, but it's more of a humanistic issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think film can transport you to these places, and also film can inspire you to go visit those places many times. Over the course of 20 years of doing the festival, people have come to me after watching a film that took place in a foreign country and said, you know what? I went and visited that country mainly because I was intrigued by what I saw in that film.
Yeah.
So that is so inspirational to me that would happen.
I think one of the interesting things about that, too, that theme is, and you talk about this in your literature, is that universal concerns and desires that unite all people. Don't we need to unite? If ever there's a time that we could use, you know, inspiration to unite people, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about Dreams, the opening night film. I loved that film, loved it. And, you know, I don't even know how do you describe it, Tim? I mean, it's like very intriguing. It just catches you right off the bat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, the description would be something like that, you know, that it a teenage girl starts writing about her feelings toward a teacher and gets into how their relationship develops. But there's certainly a mystery involved, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on a deeper level, it's about a lot of things. But one thing I think is as somebody who writes, I what intrigued me was the idea that the teenage girl who happens to be a great writer talks about how she wants to preserve the experience and hold on to it. And she can do that if she puts it down in writing. But the thing is, this is where the mystery comes in. How much has she really revealed? Has she held back anything? And, you know, certain writers write a lot about their experiences, whether it's Hemingway or Kerouac or whoever. And, okay, do you tell everything? Because you can hurt people if you tell everything. So even if you're determined to, I want to expose the truth. Unvarnished truth. What is life really about? But you still kind of have to hold back too.
Except for she's writing it for herself. She's not expecting to share it, right?
At first, yeah. And it's fascinating. But I agree with you, Mindy. I love this movie. I'll be very surprised if it isn't like in my top 10 of the year by the end of the year.
Wow,
it's because, and again, this is the kind of thing that, you know, not only do you get from festival films, but international films, mm-hmm. because international films don't have to worry as much about the bottom line because they don't spend as much. The budgets aren't as high for international films. So they can take more chances and they don't have to worry about first weekend box office numbers and that.
Yeah.
But this movie is a perfect example. Well, all the movies that Richard shows are examples of that.
Yeah.
But
so, Dreams, when did you see this first, Richard?
Well, I had got to see the film at its premiere at the Berlin Film Festival, International Film Festival, back in February. And it eventually won the Golden Bear.
Not surprising.
So it won the jury prize. And interesting enough, the film, as kind of harking back to what Tim said, was created by a writer. I mean, he's a Norwegian writer. He's known mostly as a writer, not a filmmaker. And he made a trilogy. And the trilogy is Love, Sex, Dreams. And each film kind of works independently, but they basically cover the same themes of sort of sexuality, identity. Dreams was my favorite of the three. I've seen all three. We're actually playing this weekend one of the three called Sex. We never got to play that, so I thought I'd play it on the last weekend right before we play Dreams. Dreams was definitely my favorite, and it does have that mysterious quality to it because you don't know. She's a teenager, and this is her first love, her first crush. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's real.
Right.
I mean, she imagines all sorts of things. She imagines that she is getting sort of a reciprocation of her unacquitted love, but then you find out.
But is she?
Is she? You don't know.
Yeah.
And so it. And also what I love about the film is the three generations of women that live together.
Mm.
Her grandmother, her mother, and herself, and they all have a different perspective on sort of the writing and how they sort of deal with the writing.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of humor in it also.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You get
yeah.
that great Norwegian dry humor throughout the film, and it's very entertaining on that level
so
also.
I was like, okay, I have to pause for a minute here because I was, you know, watching it. I'm like, oh my goodness, I've got to get back to see what happens.
Yeah. Right.
But I think the different perspectives are certainly interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
But also, it also reminds you what it was like to be a teenager. Those intense, strong feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same thing, you go, okay, how much is in her imagination and how much is real?
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it's such a great story.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that movie a lot.
Yes.
Very
strong.
And I love this kind of thing too in movies where it's almost like a musician with improvisation or whatever, where all of a sudden the grandmother and the mother are arguing over the merits of Flashdance, the movie. And it's really, that's what, to me, that was one of the funniest movies.
That was
scenes. Yeah. Was sort of, they're arguing. And after all those years, they're still like bitterly yeah, going at
it. I was 10 years old, Mom. When I, yeah, exactly. All right, so, Richard, I imagine after watching some of these films, and I think Tim touched on this, people walk away having these deeper conversations, right? So you must hear that all around town after these films, and people go, hey, you know, what about this, and what about, you know?
I do hear it. I do hear it because people obviously know who I am, and I see them out and about, and they will engage with me, you know, at the supermarket, at the post office or whatever, at restaurants. You know, sometimes my wife gets annoyed if we're out to dinner and someone wants to come over and talk about the film they just saw last week at the film center. But I, you know, I love it, of course, you know, and she has to tolerate it. She's probably listening right now. But in any case, yes, I love the engagement. I love people talking about the films. I love when people come out of the theater and go, you know, I don't really know what I just saw, or I have to process this a little longer.
Or like in dreams, I want to know the next chapter, right?
Right.
Where does this girl go from here, right? All right. So you've seen all of the films, Richard. Looking at this, Wendell, what are some of the ones that you're most excited about?
Well, you know, that's very difficult to, you know, state.
All of them.
Yeah, all of them, of course, because they were curated by me. And you know, I have something invested in each and every one of them. You know, I think they're all very delightful, you know, in their own right, and stimulating and provocative in all their rights. I do have to say that I have not seen any of the animated shorts, because as in years past, Bill Plimpton, who is an twice Academy Award nominated animated short filmmaker, will be presenting a international showcase of animated shorts, and he brings that as a compilation to the festival, and I haven't actually had a chance to see it yet. He's sending it to us this week, and this is Bill's probably 15th international festival that he's attended, though he hasn't been at the festival for at least 4 or 5 years. Prior to COVID, he would come every year from the first year in 2006 through to 2019, but of course COVID kind of threw that train off the track, so to speak, and he hasn't come back since. So it was very important for me to invite him back for the 20th anniversary. But I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, all the films, you know, I mean, I could say which ones maybe I enjoyed better than others. I don't know. I mean, you know, most of them are narrative features. We have a film from Bulgaria called The Black Sea, which is a very interesting film because the center of the story is a man from New York City. He's African American, and he goes to Bulgaria thinking that he's got a sugar mommy that's going to take care of him. And he ends up going there to find out, well, I can't give the spoiler away. I'm not going to tell anyone, but he ends up being kind of stranded there in Bulgaria, and he gets to really engage with the people who find him fascinating. Of course, he's from New York City. He's African American, which I assume, I've never been to Bulgaria, but I'm not sure how many black individuals live in Bulgaria. But it's a very intriguing film about, again, that visitor to a strange land, the fish out of water, and how he navigates the waters to really come to love the place.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting film. It's playing out on Friday at 1 o'clock. Some people might say, well, why would I go see a film at 1 o'clock? But that's the fun aspect of a film festival, is that you go and watch films at all times during the day.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to festivals where I've seen films at 9 o'clock in the morning with my coffee.
Why not?
So,
so there's 14 features and 2 short film programs, right?
16 altogether programs.
Yeah. Tim, you've seen another one of these movies.
Yeah, I've seen a couple others, but I, the closing night, Four Mothers, Irish film, directed by Darren Thornton.
Yep.
really, you know, I didn't know from the description. I'm like, will that be kind of contrived or that, you know, guy saddled with four elderly women that he has to take care of them. But it was so good. That's another great movie. And by the way, you know, when, you know, like sometimes when people are talking about, oh, challenging movies of that, and people are like, well, I want to be entertained. It is incredibly entertaining. Yeah. All of them are. They just, some of them require you to think. That thinking can be entertaining. Mm-hmm. But this one is very, you know, very funny and smart and deep. It's a, you know, it's about, you know, it's about a writer who, is kind of, he has a new novel out and he has to choose in a way between taking care of his mom, which he does, versus going on a tour of the United States for his book. And you know, okay, a lot of people haven't experienced that exactly, but a lot of people our age or younger have experienced having to take care of mom and the guilt involved and where, do, you know, can you carve out your own life still without feeling like a jerk? And so it gets into some pretty thought-provoking stuff while also being very, very entertaining and just a lovely performance by the main actor, I thought, and just I thought it was a great movie,
and not just one mom.
Yeah, he ends up with four. Yeah,
but you know, just even you go, okay, four mothers. You know, there's got to be comedy in that.
Oh yeah.
Well, I love the plot device because his mom can't speak. She speaks through her little tablet, and so she types in what she wants to say, and then the tablet says it. So, of course, it's unfiltered. Mm-hmm. So when she's around the other mothers, she's unfiltered, saying, well, I don't like this person, and why is this person in the bathroom? And so she has no filters, and that some of the comedy comes from that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very unique plot device to drive the humor in the story.
Right.
But you're right. And it also kind of reminded me, believe it or not, of an Italian film called Mid-August Lunch that was a similar scenario where a man who's taking care of his older mother has three other mothers dropped into his lap because all the other friends of his are going on holiday in August, because August people leave Rome, they get out of the city, they go to the country, they go to the ocean, and he's stuck preparing lunch for four mothers. So very similar plot, and
actually,
I always love that.
I think that movie is credited in this
it possibly
movie.
Possibly
like
could
based
be.
On,
inspired
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, but I think I actually have seen that film, although it's funny when I go, wait a minute, didn't I see that? And
I know,
it's like, oh, yeah, I have. I think this movie is better.
I
like this one more.
Yeah.
Right. All right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the 20th annual Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival with festival director and founder Richard Paradise and film critic Tim Miller. 866-999-4626. Maybe you have a favorite international film you'd like to share with us. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So of these 14 features and two short film programs, you've got two documentaries?
Two documentaries this year. Documentaries is a important genre of film or style of film that we showcase all year long at the film festival, Film Center. So I don't necessarily always feel a need to have documentaries in the International Film Festival, but I found these two documentaries to be compelling enough to include. And they are obviously based in other parts of the world. One is Checkpoint Zoo, and Checkpoint Zoo refers to a zoo in the Ukraine, the National Zoo in the Ukraine. And so most people might not even think of what happens to animals in a zoo when war breaks out, when Russia invaded the Ukraine and started bombing the Ukraine, you know, not just people were in harm's way, but in the case of these zoo animals, they were in harm's way and something had to be done. So this documentary is a wonderful, you know, view of how people came together to save the animals in this zoo, how they transported all these animals from lions and tigers and bears to camels and all sorts of mammals and zoo life out of the zoo to a more safe haven, to a sanctuary, to other zoos in Europe and other places. And it really, you know, dives into, you know, the great care that was taken.
I can only even imagine, like, not only like in peacetime, trying to find, like, who can take the camel and who can take and who has room for that, and then transporting them. And then you've got all this chaos of war around you.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So it's another side of the war. I mean, we've seen this war go on for, what, 3+ years now on TV. We've seen the bombings and everything. But, you know, this is a little slice of that war that most people would not be sort of exposed to other than this documentary.
Yeah.
So highly recommend. And actually, it's actually the first film that we'll show on Tuesday at 1 o'clock to begin the film festival.
Right.
But the other documentary is probably one of my favorite films in the festival, and it's a title called The Making of a Japanese. Why is it so endearing to me? Well, I love Japan. I've been to Japan several times. I love the culture of Japan. This film goes into the Japanese school system and looks at grade schoolers. First grade, which is the first year of their public school system, and sixth grade, which is the last year of their so-called grade system before the students graduate to middle school. And the director, amazing director, Emma Ryan Yamazaki, she spent 10 years working on this film. For the most part, first and foremost, trying to get a school to allow her to spend a whole year in their school.
Mm-hmm.
And to document the first graders and the sixth graders and how they interact, the teachers, the parents. And you might think that this would be a dry subject, but it's not. I mean, it's so adorable to watch. I mean, if you're a parent and you've had a first grader going to school or a kindergartner going to school for the first time, you know how dramatic that can be, how joyous can be, and how funny it can be. And then the sixth graders who are a little more mature, but they're still, what, 12 years old, 11, whatever. It's so adorable to watch. And the Japanese school system is definitely something that can be admired. It is very different from our American approach in that they're not just educating, they're also developing the students to fit in to community, to fit into Japanese society. So a lot of what you learn about these students, how they have to serve each other lunch, how they have to clean their own classrooms, how they take so much responsibility at an early age, is so fascinating to me. Yeah. And also the students themselves are so endearing that so highly recommend this film.
Yeah. I was saying, nice to walk out of a film smiling, huh?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And, you know, and I think all through the festival, there's not a lot of films that have deep, heavy subjects. I mean, there are some that are a little heavier than others. But for the most part, these are all films that you can smile at times throughout.
Right.
And they have humor in them and interesting plots and storylines.
Tell us about the short film competition.
Well, the short film competition, of course, is one of our highlights every year. And it's interesting to note, it's usually the first program that sells out, and it has sold out already a week before the festival starts. This is a culmination of a whole year's worth of submissions. We have a submission process. Most of the festival, as I've mentioned, is curated. And the short film program is not. It's curated, but in the sense that we accept submissions. We had over 250 submissions this year of short films that are less than 20 minutes in length. And we have a preview committee who work tirelessly throughout the year watching all these films that are submitted at different times. And a lot of them come at the very end. As the deadline approaches, you get this surge of entries. And our committee watches all the films. They rate the films. They score them. And then they get together, you know, at the very end when I'm asking for the 10 finalists. We only choose 10 films. It's a little different. Most film festivals will do multiple short film programs. Mm-hmm. They'll have like four, five, six tracks of short films. They'll have like 50, 60 short films. We've always done it in a very more selective approach where we select 10 finalists. And those 10 finalists then compete for a prize, a cash prize. And we have another jury, a totally different group of people, people who work in the industry, professionals, and they select the winning film for the festival. Mm-hmm. And then we bestow the prize of being the winning film of our festival on that evening, on Friday evening when we actually do the presentation.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of fun, right?
Yeah. And I'm not mentioning all the names. I could do that, but
okay.
They're
that's
in our
fine.
Program. They're on our website, the preview committee. I love them. They've been doing this for many, many years. Some from the very beginning that we started this, I think in year four or five, we started doing the short program competition. And then the jury members, most of them have been doing it for like 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. And they love doing it themselves and be able to watch these great short films.
Yeah. Now, you visit a lot of other film festivals, and some of these films have come from Sundance, Berlin, Cannes. Is it the norm for a filmmaker to present at various film festivals? Is that the idea?
Oh, yes. Yes. Usually, you know, when you're a filmmaker and you have a film that you feel has a good chance, of being accepted. And of course, a film festival like Sundance, they get, I think, about 8,000 or 9,000 feature-length films and about 15,000 short films.
Wow.
And they only show about 100 films. The chances, the probability of getting selected to be in Sundance is very, very small. And then there's a lot of other parameters. You know, are you alumnus? Have you been in Sundance before? Well, usually then you get a little bit more favoritism to getting selected again with your new film. The festivals, the filmmakers will try to get a premier festival to be their premiere, to be their so-called. I mean, if they're an international filmmaker, if they are someone that has a reputation already, then you're looking at Cannes, Sundance, Toronto, Berlin, of course. Venice. There's only a certain amount of festivals that have that premier status and also require that your film be a premiere. Whereas our film festival, we don't care if you've played at 10 other festivals. That's never been an issue for us. But each festival, each tier has their own criteria and their own a way of looking out what they want to populate their festival with. And some do actually try to have premieres. Some try to have at least a New England premiere. If you're in New England, you want a New England premiere, or you want a, sort of a North American premiere if you don't have the international premiere. But once that filmmaker has been in one of those larger festivals, then they do want to have a festival run.
Yeah.
They want to have a run of festivals where they can keep getting their film more exposure until the point when a distributor or a broadcaster will buy the rights to their film. Mm-hmm. And then usually that becomes limiting afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, because the buyer of the rights of the films doesn't want it to be overexposed. They want to go back to those markets and sell that film in those markets and have it play in theaters, or at least if it's being broadcast on a national, you know, broadcaster like, you know, PBS or, you know, Nat Geo or something like that, they start to pull back mm-hmm. on the availability to have the film shown at film festivals.
Right. Now, are the films all newer films, or do you ever kind of dip into the archive, so to speak, and look at older films? Are all of the films...
They're all new. Mm-hmm. You know, there are film festivals that will have a track of films, you know, an anthology. Maybe they're honoring a certain filmmaker. Mm. You know, Berlin does this. I know Cannes does this. Most of the major film festivals will honor two or three filmmakers, and they'll do an anthology. They'll pick, you know, the best of that person's filmology and screen those films again. Mm-hmm. We've never done that. We've never gone back into our, you know, sort of.
There's so much good news stuff, right?
There's so much good news, and, you know, yeah. we're not showing. You know, unfortunately, not unfortunately, but given our parameters and given, you know, the time frame and the fact that we have one theater, we're not showing 100 films.
Right. So 14 and two short programs.
Yeah. So everything yeah. should be new, bright, fresh, hasn't been seen.
Engaging. Yeah.
You know, I would say that a lot of these films have not been screened in Boston.
Wow, nice.
Some maybe have, but a lot of them haven't. So you mm-hmm. could say, hey, we maybe have a New England
yeah,
premiere.
There you go.
I wouldn't, you know, put that title on it. It's not important to me.
Tim, what else is catching your eye that's on the schedule there?
One other one that I've seen is When Fall is Coming. Francois Ozon, or as I
yes.
say, Ozone. The headline I wrote when I reviewed it was something like Lost in the Ozone again. It's a tough one to describe. It's kind of a mystery. What's really interesting about the film, it also involves sort of like the other movie we were talking about, the Dreams, where it's generations of women. A daughter comes to visit her mother, and you know, who's retired in rural France, and then something weird happens, and which causes a rift. And was that intentional or not? And then other things happen, and it's interesting. The director, he sometimes cuts away, like, is that person gonna, I don't know, kill that person or what? And instead of showing us what happens, he cuts away, leaving it to us to figure out, wait, well, did it happen? What happened there? and you're questioning people's motivations, and it's a very interesting movie. And I think, at least to me, one thing it's saying is it's questioning, how do we judge other people when we never know the full story, you
good
know.
Point.
We never know the full
excellent
story.
Point.
So,
yep.
And it's and, but even whatever the film's about, the director kind of really leaves that a mystery too, for you to make of it what you will. So I love that. I thought that was a very interesting, good choice too.
Yeah.
We should mention, we've got 30 seconds left here. I just want to mention, the festival runs September 2nd through the 7th. We'll have a link at our website, to your Richard, so everybody can look that up at capeandislands.org. And I also want to mention, if you can't make the festival, at your theater, you do films like this throughout the year. You have interesting films all year. I'll give you 15 seconds to talk
about
that.
Well, some of these films will return. That's always been the tradition, that we take some of the more popular films and we replay them, like Dreams will probably play in the autumn.
Yeah.
And autumn is a great time to do that, especially before the big award season starts in late November, December, when all the great Hollywood films are coming out. So, yes, look for our website, find out what we're playing, but we're open every week of the year, almost every night of the year.
All right.
Hope to see you there.
Richard Paradise, Festival Director and Founder, and film critic Tim Miller, thanks for being here.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mindy.
It.
Thank
Mindy
you,
Todd.
Mindy.
Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.